You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Start! You can call me Bruce.
Bruce Nolan is standing by.
Hey, wacky Bruce!
Coming to you from an undisclosed location, this is the Bruce Exclusive, and here's your host, Bruce Nolan.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to another edition of the Bruce Exclusive, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Nolan. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Bruce Exclusive. Welcome back. Normally, Buffalo Bills news happens the day after I've recorded my pod. But this time, Buffalo Bills news happened the day I recorded my pod and before I recorded my pod, which means I had a last-minute pivot. There was a significant chunk of my notes that either got moved or rewritten or completely obliterated out into the ether, never to be heard ever by listeners of this podcast. And of course, I'm talking about the Buffalo Bills trading wide receiver Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans. So the return for Stephon Diggs is as follows. Diggs, a 5 and a 6 for a 2025 2 coming back from the Houston Texans. It leaves the Bills with about $31 million in dead cap this season, which is the highest in NFL history for a wide receiver. There is a reason why everybody and their mother told you, I don't think this is happening. It was the financial aspects. But yet, the Buffalo Bills ended up losing cap space by trading Stephon Diggs away. And there's a lot of different angles to approach this deal from. I'd like to start with this. Everything in life is a value proposition. What you give versus what you get. Anyone who's been listening to this show for any meaningful amount of time will recognize that as a significant Bruceism. It's not just a Bruceism. I mean, that's a real name-ism as well, because that's something that governs my day-to-day behavior, and I'm very cognizant of it. If you are Brandon Bean, and what you get back is a 2025 second-round pick, and you acquire $31 million in dead cap, and you vacate 160 targets from last season, and ostensibly your wide receiver won, if that's what you get back, and yet you were still willing to give Stephon Diggs, that value proposition must have changed in his mind versus where it was. You give Stephon Diggs, you get back a boatload of dead cap, a 2 in 2025, not this year, but next year, and you get back a huge hole in your wide receiver core. But yet you were still willing to do it. You still looked at this and said, yes, I view that as being acceptable value. Let's talk about just the trade capital value first. The Buffalo Bills, to acquire Stephon Diggs, gave up a first round pick. They gave up a 4th, a 5th, and a 6th. They got back a 2 while giving a 5 and a 6. In the meantime, between those two trades, the trade for Stephon Diggs and the trade of Stephon Diggs, they got 4 very, very good seasons from Stephon Diggs. You gave up a one and some day three picks for Stephon Diggs. And then 4 years later, you gave up some day three picks to get a two. Just that by itself, I have no problem with. None. Especially when you think about what 30-year-old plus wide receivers were going for. Even receivers who were younger than that. Amari Cooper went for a five. Keenan Allen went for a four. This is the market for around 30-year-old receivers. Actually, Amari Cooper was younger at the time. So just looking at the return, you think, yeah, I'm good with that. I don't think it's a bad return at all for what the market dictates. The trade for Stephon Diggs, I thought, was completely reasonable. A 1, 4, 5, 6, sure. Especially given the production that you got during his time in Buffalo. Anybody would sign up for four really, really good seasons in exchange for that one. But it's what happened in between where it gets messy. The Stephon Diggs trade to Buffalo gets a thumbs up from Bruce on just value. The Stephon Diggs trade to the Texans gets a thumbs up from Bruce on just value. The extension ends up looking bad in retrospect. You traded him 1 year into his 4-year extension. And that's what tanks the financials. It's the extension. The trade for, great. The trade away, fine. The extension is what gets the D or the F from Bruce. Because there's multiple aspects of, quote unquote, the Stephon Diggs scenario. And you have to look at all of them. The acquisition cost, the value you got from him while he was here, and then the cost to send him away. And part of that cost to send him away is the dead cap. That's part of the cost to send him away. Which means now if you wanted to roll over that money, you can't roll it over. Well, who are you going to spend it on this year? Well, I mean, you could trade for someone and sign them to an extension and use up some of that money this year. But also it eliminates your ability to roll over that cap to next year and be more of a player next year with the money that you have. So just on paper, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs up. Thumbs up for the acquisition, thumbs down for the extension, thumbs up for the moving, just on value, just on paper. The bigger issue is that you made the move when you didn't have an immediate plan, which means now you've backed yourself into a little bit of a corner. Free agency has already gone by. Missed your ability to add a body at that time. The draft is coming up, and everybody's going to be on alert that the Buffalo Bills need a receiver. Bad strategy. If you were going to trade him, the time to trade him would be when you had something else lined up, like a four for Keenan Allen, for example, to plug the hole at a cheaper cost. Or if you would have reached out to the San Francisco 49ers and said, hey, if I were to acquire this two in 2025 at that point, and I were to toss you 28 overall this year and a two in 2025, could I talk about Brandon Ayuk at that point? Would you think about throwing him my way? Maybe toss a four back our way. It's the timing of the trade that puts the Bills in a disadvantage when it comes to strategic timing. And for me, not a fan of that particular aspect of this trade. So there are multiple different angles. But the value proposition clearly did not slant in the Buffalo Bills' favor, in Brandon Bean's opinion. He was willing to let go of Stephon Diggs. He viewed this as a positive value proposition. He didn't have to make the move. He chose to because he viewed it as a positive value proposition. Now, where do the Bills go from here? I had a radio spot on WGR not too long ago. And they said, where do you fall, Bruce, on the Bills have to take a receiver in the first round? And I said, I don't really think that's a necessary thing, but I do think I have a pretty strong opinion, a pretty strong slant toward the Bills drafting a receiver in the top two rounds. Because there's no third round pick. The drop off in talent, I think, is meaningful from the time you pick at 60 to the time you pick in the fourth. And I think you need to start preparing for the loss of Stephon Diggs. I didn't realize that was going to be a week and a half later, but here we are. I don't think you can absolutely 100% lock yourself into that you have to take two wide receivers in the top two rounds. I think it's a possibility. One of the things I mentioned on social media is that Bean and McDermott have been part of the lose an all-pro and double dip in the draft to replace him before. In Carolina, in 2016, the Panthers rescinded the franchise tag from Josh Norman, and he left and went to Washington. Right after that, in the draft, the Panthers double dipped in the second and third round and got James Bradberry and Darryl Worley to replace him. Bradberry ended up becoming a very good player for the Carolina Panthers and then later on for the New York Giants. So it's not like they're opposed to the quantity and hope one hits strategy of replacing a valuable all-pro at a meaningful position. But that doesn't mean they have to, and I'm really nervous about absolutely pinning them in to the idea that you absolutely have to do that. I would guess we see a receiver in the top two rounds and then a free agent addition later on in the offseason, like a Hunter Renfrow or a Tyler Boyd or a Michael Gallup, that kind of player. In addition, because they don't want to pin themselves into we have to double up in the first two rounds. I'm not opposed to it. I think there's enough talent in the first two rounds of the wide receiver class in this 2024 NFL draft that you can double up and get two really good players. You don't have to necessarily be forcing it. Like, there are going to be players worth it at 28. There will be players worth it at 60, and I will like them. The problem is when you get to the fourth round, the number of players I really feel strongly about and I really like kind of drops off. So my desire for the Buffalo Bills to draft a receiver in the first two rounds remains. But now it needs to be supplemented by either a double up or a draft one and sign one of those players that I mentioned, who are completely passable veterans. So that is the Diggs trade from all angles. Value proposition, the tenure with Stephon Diggs, where do the Bills go from here? But that's not all we have to the show. Stick with me. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome back, everybody, and thank you for joining me for this edition of the Bruce Exclusive, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Nolan. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Bruce Exclusive. Welcome back. We had a couple emails specifically about Diggs. Evan emailed me and said, me to beat. What's he building in there? Bean is going to trade up into the top 10 for Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome Odunze, or Malik Nabers, and also drafts two more wide receivers and or trades for Aiyuk or somehow Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase. Window's still wide open. As always, I appreciate the gigantic swing that Evan is taking. Andy said, here I am waiting for Thursday's pod to just drop. I would wager that the 2025 second is used to trade into the high to mid second round this year. Then they find their way back into the third round and boom, four top 100 selections in 2024 in no particular order, safety, two wide receivers, and a corner. I would not be shocked if the 2025 that the Bills just got was on the table for a trade up. Brandon Bean is not known to handle having an excess of picks very well. They're burning a hole in his pocket. He very much wants to spend them. So I'm not saying I would be surprised if it didn't happen, but I think it would surprise me if he didn't trade up at least once or twice in this particular NFL draft. And I do think that too is probably on the table. Speaking of wide receivers, you're going to be looking at a lot of wide receivers even more intently than you were, which seems insane to me. Bills Mafia was absolutely locked in on receivers as part of the NFL draft prior to the Stephon Diggs trade. And now that it's happened, they'll be double locked in. They'll be uber locked in, ultra locked in. I don't know what you want me to use, but they'll be in the zone, auto zone. And so for me, I think it's important to talk about wide receiver analytics because you're going to hear a lot of it. One of the names that's been floating around, I floated around when I was talking on WGR just this past week with Sneaky Joe in the morning, was Xavier Leggett and him being a possible option at 28. I felt like he would fit the Buffalo Bills' preference. I think that the yak ability, I think that the athleticism, I think the football character is something they're going to be high on. But what you're going to see talked about a lot regarding that player and potentially other players is the term breakout age. And it got me thinking that we need to talk about analytics usage when it comes to the NFL draft. One of the things that's really important that I tried really hard to get right when I created QB Stew was understanding what the metric is intended to solve for and to know when to apply it, and more importantly, when not to apply it. If I, for example, didn't know that passer rating didn't qualify as a metric that would count rushing from a quarterback, I could potentially use it to compare apples to oranges, which would make me look pretty stupid. If I don't know what it does, if I don't know what it's intended to do, then all of a sudden, it feels a little different. We won't know when to apply the metrics and whether or not to include or exclude potential outliers if we don't know what the metric is. Well, this guy doesn't line up with this metric. Okay, well, if you don't know what the metric does, are you supposed to care about that? Are they an outlier? Are you just ruling them out? Or is there context that would mean that the metric, as the way it is designed, does not apply to that player? Let me tell you about breakout age. The breakout age for a wide receiver is the age they were at the beginning of the college football season when they first posted a dominator rating at or above 20%. Now, what's a dominator rating is the next natural question. A dominator rating is the percentage of your total team's receiving production. How big of a part of the offense you were. So, going back to breakout age, how young were you when you became a meaningful part of your college team's offense? That's the way it is without me using any sort of fancy terminology, without using any metrics at all. How young were you when you became a meaningful part of your college football team's offense? Why? Why does that matter? It's the idea that if you can dominate 19, 20, 21, 22, 23-year-olds when you're 19, that's more impressive than if you can dominate 19, 20, 21, 22, 23-year-olds when you're 23. That's the difference right there. If you can only dominate that group of people when you're on the older side and as such are more physically mature, have been in the weight room, have been in the strength training, you are now playing against people who are ostensibly lesser athletes than you on average, then you can win. But if you're 19 and you're consistently beating 23-year-olds, that's different. That's why people care about breakout age. The idea being, if you were really that good, you would have succeeded earlier. The fact that you had to wait until later means you needed to be more physically dominant than them in order to beat them. And when you go to the NFL, that's not going to be true. You're not going to be more physically dominant than them in the NFL. Cornerbacks in the NFL are not going to be 19-year-old cornerbacks from Akron. They're all going to be the best of the best of the best with honors. Even the cornerbacks who are not the elitist of the elite in the NFL are still better than the overwhelming majority of college players that you faced if you were a wide receiver. That's why people care about breakout age. Now that I've explained that to you, the question is, what do we think about Xavier Leggett? He didn't break out until he was old, relatively speaking, for a college football player. He's going to be a 23-year-old rookie. He's going to turn 24 in January, immediately following the regular season of his rookie year. He's older for a prospect. So then the question becomes, why wasn't Xavier Leggett productive earlier? And that's the question that they have to answer. But given the fact that you and I are not privy, Doug Whaley thanks you, to access to the South Carolina program, we can't get that answer. All we know is he broke out later. And there are significant metric correlations between players who broke out later and not having success in the NFL. But why? Because of what I just told you. But what if that doesn't apply to Xavier Leggett? What if he was able to be physically dominant and other things happened that stopped him from being successful? Then it really wouldn't apply to him, would it? Because the theory behind breakout age is the fact that you weren't able to be dominant younger. What if he was able to be dominant younger, but there was something else that stopped him from doing that? We would never know. So it just kind of leaves it as an open question mark. We don't know whether or not this metric applies to Xavier Leggett because we don't exactly know why. So instead, what we do is we just blanket it and say, yes, I don't know, but the probability is it's not going to go well. When you look at the metrics and the correlation between people who had super late breakouts and success in the NFL, it is not good. That doesn't mean it can't happen. There are exceptions to rules. But knowing why it is we care about the metric will help you know, if you can get the information, as to whether or not the player you're looking at falls into or out of the spectrum of probabilities. I have said before that I do not like size outliers. Tank Dell, DeJuan Jones, too small, too big. People who are really small for the position or really big for the position, I don't have a tendency to like. There is a significant correlation between people who are too small for the position and not being successful, and people who are too big for the position and not being successful. There is a meaningful correlation there. But I don't have to find out any context. I don't have to go, well, yeah, but why are they that small? It doesn't matter. They're that small. There's no context that's going to somehow make them not small. But that's the difference between using size as a metric and using breakout age as a metric. One of them has a gap that could be filled with context if you had the ability to do it, and the other one does not. The other one is what it is. And so it's important. There's a juxtaposition there. Size outliers are analytics, warning signs. Not just because of their ability to translate, but also longevity. But breakout age could be a warning sign if it lines up with the theory behind why we care about breakout age to begin with. And here's the truth. This is the really ugly truth. We don't know nearly enough to make accurate judgments. In fact, the people who have all the data in the world, the NFL teams have tons of data, they don't even make accurate judgments. How the heck are we gonna? So show yourself some grace. show the draft evaluators some grace? Because we're just going based on film and then interviews with these prospects, hearsay. We don't have medical. We don't have inside information about what the coaches really said about them off the record. And all these things go into providing context to analytics like breakout age. We just have to accept not having the information. And for some people, not having that information is enough for them to go, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm not comfortable with that. And I understand that. If you are completely out on Xavier Legette because of the concept of breakout age, I'm good with that. I understand that. I don't blame you. I don't at all. Because you're just missing this whole piece of context. But not even South Carolina fans are going to be able to fill that in for you. They might just be big fans of him and be like, well, no, there's excuses here. Let me just tell you about this. But they're not going to be able to fill in the context. Why wasn't Xavier Legette productive earlier in his career? But as you look at wide receiver metrics, just know that for some of them, whether or not you should loop in this player who's an outlier as part of the group or leave them as an outlier is based on context that you might not have. And you have to be comfortable with that. I'll give you another example. Pressure to sack ratio for quarterbacks. Pressure to sack ratio correlates with NFL success as a quarterback. The higher the pressure to sack ratio, the worse. If you get sacked on 32% of your pressures, that's not good. If you get sacked on 18% of your pressures, that's good. When you have pressure, what do you do with it? A lot of people look at it as a processing metric. Do I know where to go with the ball when things get ugly? Can I avoid getting sacks either with my arm or with my legs? It's really important. Because it's not like the pressure is going to necessarily get way better in the NFL. How many quarterbacks do you know? It's not that common where you go to the NFL and all of a sudden, you're like, this is easy street. Man, college was so much harder than this. Very few quarterbacks are ever going to say that. And the ability to know where to go with the football is important. What if you just had like the worst offensive coordinator in the world, though? That's context, right? He doesn't let you do anything at the line of scrimmage. You have no hot routes. You have no checkdowns. You don't even get to control the sliding, the protection. And the protection's off all the time, so you're generating way more pressures that are blind, just wide open pressures. That would be an example of context that you would provide to this, why is this high? So for me, this is the way I would look at, and I know this is a lot of work, and none of us have the time for it, I get it. But if we want to be logically, intellectually honest, we would look at these metrics for college players coming out. And when we saw one that was particularly significant, either really good or really bad, we would go, And then we would go digging into it. Why is that so good? Why is that so bad? Why is this a departure from the norm? We would go out and we would seek out context. But we don't always have the time for that. So we're left with less accurate information than even the people who get it wrong all the time. And that is why trading up in the NFL draft is absolutely arrogance. That doesn't mean that it's wrong, but it's important that we know that. Because there is no foolproof prospect. Marvin Harrison Jr. isn't a foolproof prospect. Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, none of them are foolproof prospects. We see significant amounts of busts in the top 10 of the NFL draft every single year. But trading up is arrogance. That doesn't mean it's bad, it's just arrogant. It's the I am so sure about this prospect, I'm willing to pass up at multiple bites of the apple, generally speaking. Most of the time it's a 2-for-1, a 3-for-1, a 4-for-1, 4-for-2. It's a net negative in the amount of picks you get. Sometimes you might have what we call a bracket, where you'll send 28 and 60 and you'll get back 20 and 109 or whatever it is. I'm just making up random numbers. So most of the time, it's not a two in, two out. It's you're losing more picks than you're gaining. So for me, it's important to note that trading up is arrogance. I just mentioned all the context we don't have. And then I said, even the people who have all the context get it wrong all the time. Trading up is arrogance. That doesn't mean it's not the right move. Sometimes it is. Sometimes you nail it, and that's awesome. But it's really important to note that Brandon Bean has an arrogant style when it comes to drafting. He trades up way more than he trades back. He believes in his draft philosophy, and I would be shocked if he didn't believe in it this year. The Bills using a four to trade up in the first round, two or three spots, and then using the 2024 two at 60 and the 2025 two to trade up meaningfully in the second round, again, would not shock me at all. Because there is a level of arrogance to trading up. And he's willing to do it. Despite the data that indicates that we probably don't know very well who the best players are. If you hit it, you hit it. So, Bills trade Stephon Diggs. We talked about it from all angles. We talked about metrics. We talked about context behind the metrics. And now I'm out of here. And if somebody comes up to me on the street and says, "Hey, stranger, what do you think about the Buffalo Bills trading Stephon Diggs?" I'll say, "Well, that's the way the cookie crumbles. I'm Bruce Nolan, Buffalo Rumblings."
Support for this podcast came from SAS. Data is everything. And now everything is data, which means more to process, more to analyze. And now more than ever, speed to answers matters. So how do you produce those answers as fast as the world produces data? With SAS Viya, the quickest way from a billion points of data to a point of view. It's a more productive data and AI platform that helps you get more done. Learn more today at sas.com/VIYA.
Support for this show comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the big hype around AI. The truth is, AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people to learn more.